This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. There's general consensus that we are living in highly partisan times, with conservatives and liberals in government and in the media viewing each other with suspicion and even contempt. But what happens when the political becomes the personal? I know someone who sent an email to everyone invited for Thanksgiving dinner telling them do not talk politics, knowing that an argument could ruin the holiday. What about friends? Have political debates tested a friendship with someone with different values and beliefs? And even more intimate, how about spouses and partners who don't agree about candidates and important political issues? How do we handle these conflicts? Well, we asked Dr. James Cordova to join us. He's a professor of psychology at Clark University in Worcester, Mass. He has a private practice, also contributes to Psychology Today. And James Cordova, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. And we need to get him up and running. Do we have you there, Dr. Cordova?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah. And I can hear you. That was a pregnant pause. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. You have a private practice. Is this an issue that you find couples or individuals or partners bring to your office?
You know, every once in a while they do. In fact, as the political season heats up, it does become a more frequent issue that I see in my practice, absolutely.
And is a disagreement over politics any different from a disagreement over allowances for children or bedtime or money or sex or anything else that couples argue about?
You know, in some ways, not at all. That these differences between partners, if entered into the right way, they can all be bridges to a more intimate understanding of each other. And in some ways, they are a little different, right? They do have a values component that can sometimes be particularly tricky for couples.
Well, I would think values, I mean, many things have values. We think of a budget, a federal budget as a moral document. And
sure.
Then I think there are values that seem a little bit closer to home, whether it's something like gay marriage or abortion or contraception.
Right.
Which maybe feels a little more personal than a federal budget.
Exactly. And so, and in some ways, those are the key issues that really divide the political spectrum, and they aren't everything, right? They aren't the totality of politics. They aren't the totality of the places people stand when they think about how to solve a community's problems, how to structure the community that they want to live in. But those are the sticky ones. And so there's a certain attraction there and a certain intractability that can make it particularly hard for couples to talk about. But even there, some opportunity for partners in a long-term intimate relationship to really strive to understand each other better.
And how do you suggest people do that? And I'm actually thinking of the very public couple of James Carville and Mary Madeline, who at least on camera seem to disagree pretty dramatically about just about all issues. I don't know if that's an act or what happens when they drive home together or they're home together. But it seems like different couples have different styles of engaging each other. What are some words of advice you would give to couples or individuals who are?
I think it's a great example. And one of the things that they epitomize is just bringing a very healthy sense of humor to the table when you're talking about these sorts of things. When you watch them, there are moments when things get heated, but for the most part, there is a great deal of warmth and humor. You can tell that they clearly love each other and that even though they have serious disagreements, they can hold it in a lighter kind of way. They're also tend to avoid ad hominems, right? They're not calling each other names, mm-hmm. They're not disparaging each other. They're really trying to understand each other and help the other person understand each of them. And in some ways, that's the key, right, is to not so much try to win, to not make it a competition about I'm right and you're wrong, but to really try to take the stance of being a listener, right, someone who's trying to understand. I might and probably will ultimately disagree with you, but not from a place of not thoroughly understanding. And so to first move in that direction of okay, let me understand where you're coming from. And I can love you and disagree with you at the same time.
And that sounds great, and that's hard to do.
Oh, yes, it is.
Because people, especially when it comes to things like politics, and it's probably true for a lot of other issues as well, I think people generally think that they're right.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And of course you are.
Well, exactly.
And so is the other person. And that, you know, the human mind was not built to hold two competing ideas at the same time. That takes practice. And one of the greatest challenges of intimacy in a long-term intimate relationship are these sorts of emotion skills and communication skills that allow you to get into these places that are very uncomfortable and to stay engaged, to not walk away, to not start to vilify each other, but to continue to seek to compassionately understand each other. And you know, intimacy is not for the timid of heart.
Indeed. And I also know of couples, and I've certainly read about couples who just, it's just kind of a hands-off policy, which is, we're just not going to go there. Does that seem like a healthy, psychologically healthy way to resolve some of these disagreements?
It absolutely can be. You know, there are different styles for different types of couples, and for some couples, there's evidence in the research literature that that sort of approach that is, let's go ahead and agree to disagree, can be a very healthy approach to handling these types of disagreements that just don't lend themselves to some sort of conclusion that feels like, ah, there we go, we feel good about this. The potential downside is that it can be a slippery slope towards further and further distance between partners. So although it can be healthy, and in most cases when couples do choose that sort of strategy, the data seem to suggest that it can be healthy for their relationship for years, for some couples it can turn into, well, let's just not talk about anything. And so it does have that little bit of a there's a little bit of a danger of creating a gap in the relationship that can grow.
I was reading about John Gottman, who's done a lot of research on how couples argue with each other, relate to each other, and he talks about criticism and stonewalling and defensiveness. But he says the most toxic thing that a couples can do with each other is have contempt for each other. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's where couples can get stuck, right? Because, I mean, for me, I think in the service of helping couples to develop a greater sense of understanding of each other and a deeper intimacy in their relationship, it helps to talk. Mm-hmm. You know, talk, and complain. You know, complain. And in the realm of politics, it's often complaining about the way the world is and about, you know, how things are, what you worry about, what you care about. That can become, when it gets heated, criticism, right, which is more, you know, criticism of who the other person is,
right,
rather than complaining about what's going on in the world. And then criticism can easily then turn to contempt, mostly out of frustration, right? Because, again, like you bring up the big issues, you know, abortion and gay marriage and those sorts of issues that just, they don't lend themselves to simple solutions. And so, you know, it's easy to get increasingly frustrated. And so for some people, out of that increasing frustration can come the sort of emotional distancing that becomes contempt. And once you sort of cut your partner off emotionally like that, the roots of the relationship start to dry up.
Do you have either friends or family members that have different political beliefs from you?
Oh, yeah. I get continual emails that...
Those chain emails.
Tell me which way I should vote and who I should hate this week. Yeah.
Right. And what do you just, I hear you laughing. Is that what you do?
That's usually my first response, yes.
Here we go again.
And sometimes, you know, I take the agree to disagree route. And sometimes, you know, if I have the time and the inclination, there's room for debate, you know, for trying to help the people in my life understand why I think the things that I do, why I believe the things that I do, with no pressure that they have to change their minds.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Linda from Downingtown joining us on Radio Times. And Linda, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
A great, interesting conversation.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. At what point, we have neighbors next door. They're good friends of ours. I wouldn't say good friends, but we enjoy their company. And they're Republican. We're diehard Republicans. We're diehard Democrats. And over the dinner table, from time to time, when they have some couples over who are also Republicans, there tends to be some comments that I wouldn't quite feel, we're not quite comfortable regarding race and the president and this and that and the other.
Right.
And so we don't usually tend to antagonize them or, you know, we tend to sit there and try to take the compassionate understanding route, like, well, you know, because we feel compassionate for people that would have any sort of dislike for anybody. That's not a good way to necessarily be in life anyway. So at what point, when you take the higher moral ground, do you kind of cut the ties and say, you know what, this friendship just isn't working for us?
Well, Linda, that's a great question. And James Cordova, go ahead.
Well, I think that it's a common experience to have, you know, not just with neighbors, but with friends and with family, which are even, you know, they're even harder to cut the ties with, right? And I think that there's something to really honoring that moment when you feel like, okay, I'm kind of tired now.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like pushing forward would just, you know, enter this place of diminishing returns. And I think honoring that moment is to take some time off, right? To back away for just a moment, to let your own, to let yourself sort of settle a little bit and recenter, but not necessarily going quite so far as to cut the relationship off, right? Okay, this is signaling to me that I need a break. And then to wholeheartedly enter the conversation again with, you know, great faith that how you're resonating, the way that you are being in the world, makes a difference.
Well, and we're almost up at a break here, but I mean, would it be fair to say, taking Linda's example, to say, you know, I'm uncomfortable when you say XYZ about this particular person?
I think that's precisely the way to go. Again, it's inviting a certain kind of intimacy. It does take great trust in that quality of that friendship, that the container of that friendship can hold that deeper understanding of who you are as a person. I get where you're coming from when you say that sort of thing, but it's really uncomfortable for me, and it makes me think these other things.
Well, let's take that short break. Linda, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Our guest today on the show is Dr. James Cordova. He's a professor of psychology at Clark University. That's in Worcester, Mass. He has a private practice, and he contributes to Psychology Today. We asked him to join us as we talk about how to talk about politics with folks that you might disagree with, whether they are your neighbors, your family, your friends. We have a couple waiting in the wings, and we'll be taking some more calls after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoane. It's the second day of the fall membership campaign at WHYY, and here's a question for you. Since you are listening to the show, are you a member? You know what you're getting, you know what it means to you, and you know that listeners are the lifeblood of public media here at WHYY. So make a pledge right now at 1-888-345-9499. Or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. We also have a special offer for the fans of Radio Times, a very cool brand new mug designed by our very own Pulitzer Prize winning Tony Auth, marking the show's 25th anniversary. It's yours for a pledge of $60. In this hour, we're talking about how couples and families and friends can get along even if they don't agree on political issues. It's just one of the 500 shows we produce every year on Radio Times. Surely that's worth your pledge of support. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Phoebe specializes in healthcare, housing, and support services for senior adults. From independent living to rehabilitation services and skilled nursing, Phoebe offers continuing care retirement communities in Lehigh, Berks, Bucks, and Montgomery counties. On November 2nd, Phoebe presents the Institute on Aging Conference, featuring keynote speaker Larry Minix, CEO of Leading Age. The conference focuses on reclaiming advocacy duties to benefit seniors in our communities. Details at phoebe.org. Phoebe Ministries supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about when the political becomes personal. And again, our guest, Dr. James Cordova, staying with us for the full hour. Joining us now are a couple. Janet Lewis is a Democrat, senior lecturer in the School of Nursing on the Nurse Midwife Graduate Faculty at the University of Pennsylvania. And Janet Lewis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Marty. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you here as well. And Andrew Cole is with us. He's a Philadelphia attorney with a neighborhood law practice in West Philadelphia. He's a Republican. And Andy Cole, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Janet, let me begin with you. And I know you met about 20 years ago. You've been married since 1995. Have your political beliefs changed since you've been together?
Andy might have a different opinion about
Go
that.
Go ahead,
Janet. But I would say that in a way that I certainly have been shaped by being married to Andy, but I think that my core positions were pretty solid when we met and we married because I was already 32. So I don't know that they've changed that much over the course of the marriage.
How about for you, Andy Cole?
My political views have probably changed a little bit, but I think that's more to do with age.
Meaning, as you age, have you gotten more conservative?
Not really. I think as I've gotten older, I've just actually become more moderate, I guess, more centrist.
So how would you describe your political beliefs, Andy?
I'm a fiscal conservative and social, probably in the middle of the road.
And how about for you, Janet?
I think less about the money, which Andy can vouch for, and I think a lot about the social issues.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And did you watch last night's debate together?
I did not because I was teaching a class and then at school working very hard for the wee hours. So,
did you watch it, Andy?
Actually, I listened to it on the radio.
And did you have any reaction or visceral reaction to what you heard, Andy?
Not really. It sounds, as I think many of the debates are, is that it's a chance to expound not ideals, but theories and arguments that have already been proposed before. As an attorney, it sounds like you're hearing in the appellate level argument at the debate.
So you're not particularly impressed. But I'm curious about how the two of you either talk or don't talk about some of the political issues that you disagree on. And Janet, how do you discuss, perhaps if you think differently about the budget or, I don't know, some of these fiscal issues, how do you talk to Andy about them?
I think that we have many different ways that we explore these issues. I find it very interesting that sometimes if I'm alone with the radio and listening to a debate or something, I may be the person who's like, I can't believe you think that. But when I'm having a discussion with Andy, it tends to be more of, okay, why do you think that? Because you're having a two-way conversation with someone. It's not just they're saying something and you're reacting to it. You're actually processing it, coming back, well, what do you think about this? And so there's more room for discussion, which is one of the reasons that I have issues with some of the media that gets played, is that I feel like it's all about the drama and pointing out our differences as opposed to exploring how we actually have similarities.
Oh, that's interesting. Andy, do you have a similar experience?
I'm sorry, similar experience relating to...
Well, that if you're alone, you might be yelling and screaming at your radio, but when Janet is there, you might be more willing to engage with her on some of these issues?
Well, I think, obviously, Janet's expertise and knowledge about healthcare and her experiences in that area have, informed my worldview a great deal. And so I think that's had an impact on me. As far as, listening to the radio, I do think to some extent people blaming the media is like blaming the messenger. I don't think that most people are changed. They're either hearing or not hearing what they want to hear or don't want to hear.
Oh, that's interesting. James Cordova, let me get you in on the conversation as well. And here we have a real live couple who have some interesting disagreements when it comes to politics. Anything that jumps out at you?
Well, I think the thing that makes the most sense to me, the part that sort of stands out to me, is that it's clear that Janet and Andy, because they talk to each other about these sorts of things, are very respectful in this spot. You know, I love what Janet, what you said about, you know, the face-to-face interaction, right? That it's just so much easier to be polite and respectful and willing to hear and willing to sort of seek understanding when you're face-to-face with somebody. Mm-hmm. And media just doesn't allow for that sort of thing. So my sense is, you know, as the two of you have moved through your marriage with these different sort of worldviews, that you have been influenced by each other because you've been willing to be influenced by each other.
Does that sound about right, Jenny?
Yeah. I would totally agree with that. I believe really strongly that we all come to an opinion of the, when you were talking earlier about I'm right and I believe I'm right for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's because we're shaped by those experiences in life that have shown you I'm right because all my experiences led up to this is the best way for me to believe about something. And I have to say that I think that marriage is a piece of that experience that just keeps getting layered on. So why I'm right today, influenced by Andy and my influence on him, changes how I'm right tomorrow and what my beliefs are. And I think it's really hard when you're involved in a marriage to extract yourself and say, well, that's not the marriage we have, at least, that we don't have an that the other person doesn't have an influence on you anymore. Yeah.
And Andy, let me tell something to you, and then we're going to have to say goodbye to the two of you. But when you get together with friends, are your friends also bipartisan, or do they tend to lean one way or the other?
I was just going to bring that up because Janet's friends, I think, if they would use epithets or derogatory terms about me.
Oh, is that right?
And my friends would probably use derogatory terms about Janet. And in a sense, sometimes, I mean, I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but...
Go ahead. We're all ears.
I'll call her a liberal commie pinko, and her friends will call me a fascist whatever. And we laugh about that. And when we argue about this stuff, we see the humor in it. But I think our friends are more rigid, strict.
Do they mean it more when they call Janet a commie?
No, I don't think any of them mean it.
Okay.
It's just, I think being married to someone who is so opposite forces me to be a little more flexible, or else we're not going to be able to stay married. And I'm not sure, you know, when you have a marriage of two Democrats, two Republicans, two socialists, whatever, that happens. But that's my view on friends. Our friends are very good. They're a very big part of our lives. But most of our friends on Janet's side are liberal, and on my side, I think they're more conservative.
And how do you see your circle of friends, Janet?
I would totally agree with that. I think some of them shake their heads and are like, oh my God, you just spend all day fighting with him over these things. And it's very interesting because don't get me wrong, we have plenty of things that we fight about, but it's rarely about political issues. Or if it is, we are always on the, okay, well, did you think about this? What about this? What about this? And there are times where you have to realize that, you know what, they don't want to think about that issue right now. They have other things to deal with. And you just have to back off a little, but it is a continual, you know, more of a conversation as opposed to, and more of a, in a legal perspective, trying to win an argument as opposed to just call the other person a name and walk out of the room. So,
well, I think you've inspired a lot of couples, and I thank you both for joining us today in Radio Times. Janet Lewis, thanks so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much, Marty.
You're welcome. She's a Democrat senior lecturer in the School of Nursing on the Nurse Midwife Graduate Faculty at the University of Pennsylvania. Andy Cole, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
And he's a Republican and a Philadelphia attorney with a neighborhood law practice in West Philadelphia. And Dr. James Cordova, staying with us for the rest of the hour, again, professor of psychology at Clark University in Worcester, Mass. He's also has a private practice up in Massachusetts and contributes to Psychology Today. We are talking about bipartisan couples and friends and neighbors and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHY. Any more thoughts, James Cordova, as you listen to Janet and Andy talk with each other and about each other?
Well, I love the question about the friends, right, and just Andy's insight about the polarization. You know, one of the things that we know from the research is that when people are only talking to people from the same wing of the political spectrum, we do tend to become more and more polarized. And so within intimate relationships, within marriages, most marriages are between people who share the same political views. And so you would imagine that that tends to lend itself towards leaning a little bit further in that sort of common direction. What's sort of nice about what Andy was pointing out about his marriage with Janet is that because they are talking to each other all the time about this, they really can't polarize in that way. It does force them to be more understanding, to be more flexible, I think was the word that he used. And I think it's a model for the country.
Well, and I think commie pinko can be terms a term of endearment.
Absolutely.
Let's see what Brad from Mount Laurel has to say. And Brad, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Great. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I would have to say that this has directly affected my relationship with my wife.
Oh, really?
In a personal level, it does. We cannot discuss politics. I'm very politically active. Yesterday, I went to the Governor Christie town hall meeting and put off by that. And I was so excited to watch the debates last night. And I came home and I watched it. And she put in about 15 minutes and she fell asleep. About a week or so ago at dinner, she told me, you know, basically shut up. I don't want to talk about politics. And she's a Republican and I'm more on the liberal side. Mm-hmm. I guess you would say Democrat. And I just don't know how to keep the personal feelings out of it. I feel like some of these social issues speak to my core values.
Brad, I don't mean to put you in the spot here. I mean, are there other things you don't talk about as well besides politics?
No, I don't think so. I think even politics, we try to discuss it, but I think it gets a little heated. And I enjoy a spirited conversation. I've always had spirited conversations around the dinner table and so on and so forth. But I find these last couple of years, maybe it's what's going on in the country and maybe it's the vitriol and the press. I don't know. But it just seems like it is more personal these last 4 or 5 years than it's ever been.
Well, that's interesting, and I want to give James Cordova a chance to respond. James, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that this is a common experience that we often have. Usually it's with a relative, you know, at the Thanksgiving dinner table. But it does also happen in intimate relationships between married partners. And the experience is, you know, as the other person starts to tense up, and there's a moment when you can tell that pushing beyond that is going to enter this arena of diminishing returns. And there's a real skill to noticing that you're starting to push and to, you know, Janet talked a little bit about backing off. Like you can tell your partner is no longer in the mood to continue this conversation and giving them the room to settle down. The conversation will pick back up again. It always does. But if your partner's signaling to you that they need some time to settle and to cool down, then you want to honor that.
But I wonder also, embedded is that I don't want to talk to you about this, that it's kind of walling off a conversation?
It's a strong way of communicating, you know, I'm feeling frustrated and sort of conflicted about this. Now, ultimately, you don't want to live in that spot, right? Like, let's just not talk about this forever. Because, again, as I said before, it has the potential to open up a gap. My hope is that it's just a way of signaling, I need some space for the time being. And that, you know, the aliveness in that spot will reenter. And if there's been some injury there, that's why we repair. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why God made the word, I'm sorry.
Oh, I mean, the idea of that if someone's feelings have been hurt, then they might not want to engage in a heated debate on something.
Right, and I think that, you know, Brad hits the nail right on the head, right, that these issues have started to feel more and more personal. And as they start to feel more and more personal, we can feel more and more personally attacked when these debates get going. And it is personal. I mean, we do care deeply about these sorts of things. And what I often recommend to couples is to sandwich these sorts of things. Even if you don't say it out loud, to sort of sandwich it in the attitude of, I love you, I disagree with you, and I love you.
Let me see what Andrew has to say. Brad, thanks for the call. Andrew, go ahead. You're on Radio Times calling us from Willow Grove.
Yes.
Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
Recently, I was on a camping trip with a bunch of friends who we had never really shared political views before. And when they started talking about politics, I had to shut down, mainly because the questions, not so much questions, the position that was posed was something of, I guess, a racial position in terms of this upcoming election. And I was wondering, at what point is it healthy or unhealthy to kind of, you know, dismiss your political views for the sake of not arguing?
And this was, these were, would you say, racist comments, Andrew?
Yes, they were racial comments that made me feel uncomfortable, and they were mainly about the presidential election, and, you know, they were swayed to other sides, so I felt that I wasn't even able to really express my political views due to them.
Well,
it kind of forced me to shut down, you know, in that case. So I was wondering, you know, at what point do you kind of say, scrap that and, you know, just kind of cut ties with the friends that have such radical views?
Yeah, I hear you. Let me see what James Cordova has to say. James?
Well, I you know, it strikes me that this is sort of the second time that we've heard this story. And you know, it goes back to something I said earlier about, you know, to keeping the conversation, that talking is always better for a relationship in the long run than not talking. And so, you know, you notice how the issue becomes, or sort of moves into this space of do I continue this relationship or not? And you can also hear a sort of there's a part that knows this is a place where maybe I should talk more than not talk, right? That this is, you know, again, to go back to the example of Janet and Andy, right, that when we make sure that our friends and our colleagues and the people that we spend time with know where we're coming from and why it matters to us, we do influence each other. And so these are moments when, as uncomfortable as they might be, there may be some general good to be done by stepping forward and saying something, again, in the spirit of warmth and friendliness, but still, I have to disagree with what you just said.
Andrew, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And James, I'm thinking actually something that happened in my house a couple of years ago during a Thanksgiving meal where someone did say something that was offensive. And I have to say that my husband said to him, "We don't talk that way in this house."
And that's how we socialize each other. Absolutely.
The idea is that this is my house.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that there are certain rules and ways that we do or don't talk about things.
And it's also it is a result of the polarization, right? You know, the phenomena that I was talking about before, when we're only talking to people who come from the same wing of the political spectrum, we become more and more polarized, and the more we do it, the more polarized we become. And unfortunately, that's where we are in the country right now. So things that we wouldn't think of even thinking, if we were more engaged with each other, we find that we're getting more permission to actually not just think but say.
Let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We have a full bank of calls. Clearly, people want to talk about this intersection of the personal and the political. And again, our guest is Dr. James Cordova, professor of psychology at Clark University. He has a private practice in the Worcester, Massachusetts area, and he contributes to Psychology Today. Just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to transforming healthcare to make a better coordinated system that is built around you. They're committed to leading the way to focus on preventing illness rather than reacting to it, pioneering new ways to pay healthcare professionals based on the quality of care, and using technology to update your medical information electronically so everyone can be informed. Further details online at ibx.com. Independence Blue Cross, changing the game.
I'm Marty Moscoane. It's the second day of the fall membership campaign at WHYY. And here's a question for you. Since you are listening to the show, are you a member? You know what you're getting. You know what it means to you. And you know that listeners are the lifeblood of public media here at WHYY. So make a pledge right now at 1-888-345-9499. Or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. We also have a special offer for the fans of Radio Times, a very cool brand new mug designed by our very own Pulitzer Prize winning Tony Auth, marking the show's 25th anniversary. It's yours for a pledge of $60. In this hour, we're talking about how couples and families and friends can get along even if they don't agree on political issues. It's just one of the 500 shows we produce every year on Radio Times. Surely that's worth your pledge of support. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with James Cordova and taking calls. And it looks like we have John from Royersford joining us on Radio Times. And John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I don't think it's an issue, but the thing I run across is I'm an independent, and my wife's family is mostly Republicans. And when we get together, it's a lot of bashing Democrats and stuff. The funny thing I have is with my father-in-law is hardcore Republican, and I'll make comments to him like his vote doesn't count because I'm be voting against him,
yeah.
So he might as well not vote.
Yeah.
Things like that make my wife and my mother-in-law very nervous that they think that we're going to end up not liking each other. But my father-in-law and I kind of laughed it off. But there's times when I've gone out with him, with his friends, and they'll call me sometimes like a traitor and stuff like that. Then they learn that I was in the Marines. They kind of take it back and change their tone. But I find it interesting that most of the people that I come across that are Republicans are very aggressive and with a lot of hateful speeches. But I just have fun with them, and they can't sometimes handle it.
Oh, that's interesting, John. Let me give James Cordova a chance to respond. And obviously, we're talking about family interactions in different settings, and I guess with different groups of people.
Well, and it sounds to me like you're pointing at that that very powerful tool that we were talking about earlier, which is just having a good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. If you and your father-in-law are genuinely engaged in a warm sense of humor with each other around this difference, then that's adding to the quality of your relationship. You're also talking about noticing that when, as I was saying before, we hang out with people who, and we only talk with people who share our own political beliefs, we do become more and more polarized, more and more rigid, and that can be, it's a birds of a feather thing, but it can also be very uncomfortable for, you know, it makes it hard to interact with each other.
John, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Susan from Southampton has to say. And Susan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm just wondering how often people that get married that say come from, my husband and I come from both very conservative families, extremely conservative. And over the course of time, you know, we have completely evolved into much more liberal people just because of how we feel about our families and how they don't seem to care about anybody but themselves.
Wow, that's a powerful statement. Does that mean that you are reluctant to get together, or it's difficult when you get together, or you stay away from certain issues?
Oh, we we make it a point not to bring up issues.
Right.
But my family's, both our, his and mine, are very happy to bring up certain issues and try to actually bait us.
And what do you do?
And my response usually, you know, I'm actually stronger with my father-in-law than I am with my own parents, and vice versa. I say, you know, we don't agree about this. Why? Why do you, every single time we get together, start a conversation about this? You know, why is it when we come over, you have your conservative books all over your coffee table?
Well, Susan, hold on, because I want to give James Cordova a chance to jump in on this conversation. James, go ahead.
You know, I think it's you know, I love the opportunity to say, you know, listen, we disagree about this. And there's an opportunity there to also invite, you know, if you're interested in understanding where I'm coming from, happy to have a conversation with you. If you're not interested in hearing where I'm coming from, then let's talk about something else. Mm. And so, again, you know, in the interest of preserving and strengthening a relationship, you really want to be thoughtful about how we enter these sorts of conversations. And sometimes, you know, we're forced into a corner in these spots. You know, somebody really wants to buttonhole us and try to convince us. You can take that as an opportunity to, okay, let me ask questions and do my best to understand where you're coming from. And then the invitation, would you like to also understand where I'm coming mm-hmm. from? And if not, then no real conversation is happening here. Let's talk about our grandkids.
Susan, I'm just curious. Do you think your father-in-law is teasing you and your husband, or do you think he's trying to rile you up?
Oh no, he definitely thinks we are totally wrong, and okay. and his viewpoints are correct. And he actually told our daughter who she was supposed to vote for the last election, and was admonishing her if in fact she didn't agree with what he said.
Wow, that's tough stuff. Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I hope you have a good Thanksgiving, Susan, and thanks for
we work on keeping quiet.
Yeah, I hear you.
Talk about the grandkids.
Keep the focus on the grandkids. Thanks a lot for calling into Radio Times. But James, even picking up on what she said, and I think this can go in both directions, but growing up, as she said, she and her husband grew up in very conservative families. They now have much more liberal ideas, beliefs. And I'm assuming that's not an uncommon experience.
It's not an uncommon experience. It does happen. Interestingly, it doesn't happen. It's not modal. That a lot of what we're finding in the research literature is that people's basic, sort of the bone deep political feelings are passed down through the family. Mm-hmm. That there's even a relatively strong genetic component to it. So there's a genetic component, there's a family history component, there's a neighborhood and cultural component. And so they do tend to transmit down generations. That being said, also not entirely uncommon for people to change their views over time.
And that's Dr. James Cordova, our guest today on Radio Times, as we talk about how to deal with and love and talk to people whose political opinions and beliefs are different from our own. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I was reading a piece you had in Psychology Today, kind of a reminder that we're probably not as great a communicator as we think we are. Would that be a fair assessment of what you wrote?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make about ourselves as communicators is that we're any good at it. Mostly we aren't. It's a very challenging thing, you know, that we all think we're using the same words in the same way, but of course I was raised in my family, mm-hmm. And you were raised in your family, and we do mean slightly different things. You know, some large percentage of the time, that sort of regular degree of miscommunication is fine. We get by, you know, as they say, good enough for government work. When issues really matter, though, that's where it becomes important to listen and to be humble and to recognize that the first thing that we heard is probably not entirely what the person that we're talking to meant. And we need to do a little work to make sure that we really genuinely understand what the other person is saying.
I also think that the tone is so powerful. I mean, words are powerful too, but the way words are spoken can all have sometimes more impact than what those words actually mean.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And especially in a relationship that you hope to maintain and strengthen, a warm, friendly, loving, at the very least humorous tone makes all the difference in the world.
Let's see what Mary Kay from Langhorne has to say. Mary Kay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have an issue with my mother. She is of one political persuasion, and I am of another. And it's really driving a wedge into our relationship because, not because of our differences, I don't think, but it's because she has become so far out of touch with reality in her political opinions. One of the things that she has mentioned is that she's saving her pills so that when the country is taken over, she can commit suicide and not have to go to a concentration camp. She cannot enter a conversation without coming back to her unnecessary fear and anxiety for the country. And we can't talk about anything.
Is this new, Mary Kay, this behavior on your mom's part?
And well, it happened during the last election cycle as well. And then we...
Whoops, I'm sorry. It sounds like we lost Mary Kay, unfortunately. But we got the gist of what she's saying. And James Cordova, I'd be curious about your response.
You know, it happens, unfortunately, often. You know, we touched on it a little bit earlier in that it's so much easier to seek to understand each other when we are face-to-face. And if that were the majority of the experiences that we were having in our day-to-day lives, I think this sort of thing would be less common. Unfortunately, media has completely saturated our lives, and it's almost always a one-way conversation. We're being talked at. And that really does not lend itself to wanting to understand, to seeking to understand. And so we found ourselves in the spot where we are almost reflexively vilifying each other. And if you find yourself in that spot, if you find that you're vilifying the other party sort of reflexively, my suggestion is just to notice how your mind has been co-opted by the sort of forces of division and fear. And those are political forces. That's about... There is an election going on, and there is real winning and real losing, and division and fear moves votes. But we're talking about relationships, and that's a different thing. We can disagree and still love each other.
But I'm just thinking about how Mary Kay was describing her mom and some of those conspiracy theories that are out there. And it sounds like she's tapping into some of that paranoia. Are conspiracy theories a good place to put our fears?
Oh, absolutely not. But they are, unfortunately, good ways of winning votes.
So it's political?
I think it is. And it's mostly what we're hearing all day long, right? Especially now that media has really allowed us to only listen to the voices that we want to listen to. Mm-hmm. And the polarization process just goes and goes and goes. You know, in a relationship with, you know, with her mother, in a relationship with somebody else who's really fallen deeply into that place, you know, whatever you can do to be reassuring, to maintain the quality of that relationship, and as she in some ways said herself, knowing that this will pass. As the political season passes and the temperature moves down, the ears will open back up again, and there will be more opportunities to have the types of conversations that really matter. That actually make a difference in people's lives.
And that's Dr. James Cordova, again, a professor of psychology at Clark University in Worcester, Mass. He has a private practice and contributes to Psychology Today. In fact, that's where we found some of the articles that he has written. I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times. Let me get Rita from Collingswood to join us on Radio Times. And Rita, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Rita?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, Rita.
It occurred to me as I'm listening to this great conversation that my husband works for a company 10 years. His boss, ever since Obama was elected, has been just, he's a staunch Republican. He's a Tea Partier. He sends out emails that, you know, just rip down Obama. He's constantly sending these things out and talks about this in the office all the time. And my husband completely disagrees with all of his stances, but he's hesitant to say anything because for fear of, you know, retribution. I mean, this is his boss. And I've been saying, I think this is a hostile work environment, can he raise that as an issue? But he doesn't want to do anything, doesn't want to make any waves, so he just keeps to himself. But if that were me, I would be so frustrated, especially getting these emails when it's from your boss. You feel, you know, hey, I better look at this email because it's from my boss. It may be work-related or important, and it's not work-related, and it's highly politicized. I mean, what do you do about that?
Well, Rita, that's a great question, and let me give James Cordova a chance to respond. What do you think, James?
Well, you know, a little bit stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is the workplace, and that is his boss, and there are power differentials that have to be skillfully managed. And at the same time, you know, each one of these diatribes, each one of these sorts of emails and things that your husband has to hear is an opportunity to notice our own hackles going up and how we can get drawn into it and how it can almost take us over in some ways. And in the noticing of our own hackles going up, there is a moment when we have an opportunity to notice that and let it go just a little bit, not hold on to it quite so tightly, breathe through it a little bit, and get back to the business of this moment and what matters most in the next step of our lives. You know, it's lunchtime, time to eat.
We're almost out of time here, but what would you say to that boss, though, that's sending out these emails?
Well, I think to also, you know, if I were, you know, talking to him directly as a consultant, to sort of recognize that there is a power differential, and that as somebody in a power position towards people who are employed by you, it's your you have a responsibility to respect them in a particular way, and to not put them in a position where they might feel like their jobs are in jeopardy if they disagree with your political views.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And that's Dr. James Cordova. He's been our guest this full hour talking about when the personal becomes the political. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. It's our new improved webpage. And you can access all sorts of new social media that we've been testing out and using, Facebook, Twitter, and much, much more. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Artie Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.